What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You had once had an issue with Joe Budden because he said something, because you direct, as a matter of fact, as we sit here, you directed Cardi B's music video for the upcoming, I think the song or upcoming album that she got. You had, I don't think he feeling it, but you had a run in with Joe before, correct?
Yeah.
We good?
Yeah, we good with Joe. Man, Joe just be, I don't like how, I rock with Joe. Cause I done talked to him on some man to man, but I just feel like he'd kick it with you and then kind of dog you out to the world.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now, it'd be hard for him to do that because it's like the credits don't be matching. Like the comparisons, the credits that he has don't be matching.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
The credits that he got don't really be matching to like the people he be getting on ass. Mm-hmm. But he do got a word, and sometimes he say some things that do make sense. But I didn't like how he was trying to shit on the females. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's an evolution, bro. You shouldn't say that. That is dead. And then I don't want him to come for me either, like, cause I done talked to him. I ain't just down to, I just feel like I disagree with your opinion with the female music.
Right.
Like, they doing their thing. Why shit on it? You know what I mean?
Right. But we good.
We good though.
Yeah.
No problem. I ain't got no problem with nobody.
Let me ask you this. How do you, the criticism that comes along with it, how have you been able to develop thick skin? Because you know there been some criticism.
I don't come from that though.
Right.
So I'm saying, like, I didn't thank God, like, I blew up in 2013, mm-hmm. where we had to get on the floor, we had to sell CDs, we had to put posters up. I come from doing that shows from 5,000 to 10,000 Chitlin circuit. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't come from, damn, I blew up, my song blew up on Instagram, and let me check my comments, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I just feel like your core fan base, as long as you got that and you successful, you moving. But you know, you do see stuff and you go through stuff, but I try to keep myself up out of that because that'll end up, it'll drive you crazy trying to like prove to these people. Because once they see that they can get to you, they just keep going.
Yeah, they do.
They it's like one, soon they touch that nerve and you show they touch that nerve, they touch it throughout your whole thing. Like, I be seeing now, like when people drop music, right? They like the next day, it's like trolls on there saying how many streams they got in 24 hours. When I come from, your record growing, because when your record grow, it establishes you more.
Right.
Because you can have a number one record for 1 week and then it drop off the charts completely. And then that person who at 89 and they go to 69 and they go to 70, that means they done been on the billboards for 12 weeks and they got up to top 20, top 10, and you had a number one and it fell right off the chart. I come from development music, like,
right.
My first songs ain't go top 10 on no billboard, and I still was making my money, and people love me, and I feel like it's taking away from the artist's creativity. They ain't really, cause they so focused on like, damn,
getting the answer.
What my number gonna be? I ain't even checking that. Like, I feel like first week numbers is a way to downplay us, to make us a less value in the game. Mm-hmm. To like the big labels.
social media?
Social media.
What role do you think social media? Because you, like you said, there are people, sometimes people say things on social media that they would never say to your face. And sometimes people do things just to get other people in social media to click up with them and like, yeah, you see what he said about such and such. He said this about Offset. Or he said this, about that. Are you on social media like that? Or you just let it rock?
I mean, I'm always watching, but I try not to bite the bait. You feel me? Like, try not to bite the bait, because as the artist, sometimes we...
See, that's what I ain't gonna do. I ain't gonna bite the bait. I'm gonna wear... Now, as a matter of fact, since you mentioned that, I'm gonna give me some tighter clothes.
Yeah.
Now, as you told me that right there, see, don't bite the bait. I'm gonna give me some tighter clothes.
You can't bite the bait, because once you bite the bait, and they might be saying the crazy shit, you bite the bait. And if you, when you realize it, like, damn, if I'm so small, soon you bite the bait, that motherfucker everywhere.
Yeah.
Soon you speak on something, it just flooded everywhere. It ain't got big. But I ain't gonna lie, I'm a person too, though. Sometimes the super disrespectful shit, I just got to say something. Cause sometimes it just be like, too disrespectful. Like, it's been times, one time, like, they were doing some weird stuff with my kids. You mad at me that much that you gotta bring my kids and do like a fake little weird meme? Now that's when I speak on it, when it's like my family or like my kids, you got some weird, nasty shit with my kid. Like, and it'd be fan bases that'll do that shit. And it's like, bro, come on, bro. Like, I say something to that, but most of the time, I'm gonna ask, I got good people around me too, Shannon. So I'm gonna hit my folks like, hey, bro. And they'll be like, don't say nothing. They'll talk me about it. I ain't just jumping the gun, though.
Right.
Because sometimes you'll just blow it up. Some people ain't even seen that. And then next thing you know, it's on every blog. It's like,
I asked Savage about this, about dating privately versus publicly. And what's your thoughts on that? If you could do it over again, what are your thoughts on dating publicly versus dating privately?
If I could do it again,
mm-hmm.
definitely privately, just so, not, let me say not so public. I mean, not so public.
Yeah.
I mean, not so public, because I like to show mine off, you know what I mean? But at the same time, folk be in your business and people judge you like just too much, like
maybe
just too much into your world. And it deteriorates a lot of things, but that shit, man, it put a lot of pressure on folks and stuff like that. And everybody not really supposed to see your imperfections or your professions, you know what I mean? That's supposed to be, it's like a household thing. So I would definitely, more private.
Mm-hmm. I read it also that you put the lean down.
Yeah.
Why do you feel that was important? Was it bothering your health? Because... I
didn't have no health issues. It was bothering my relationships. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My family. Like, I hated that my mom would say, just sometimes I don't feel like I'm talking to my son. Cause that hurt. You know what I mean?
Mm.
You can't keep saying it, but so many times. And it wasn't her trying to like, but it was genuinely, I could see it in her eyes when she said.
You could feel it.
Or when I used to be right there, just how like, and just sitting, and I just catch my mom, I peep her like, just looking at me, and she'll try to look off. I knew I was disappointing my mama and disappointing my family.
Mm.
And it's the greatest thing I did, though, bro. I ain't gonna lie, I got a clear mindset. I'm not, because it have you like a little aggravated a little bit.
Let me ask you, why do you think so many rappers partake in it?
I mean, people got their own trauma. Sometimes I never think it's a cool thing. Like, when people be like, oh, that was a cool thing to do, I think you try something and you enjoy it, it make you feel good, and you keep doing it. That's just me being 1,000.
As we wrap up here, Offset, how does Offset continue to evolve and move the bar?
By being more creative, taking more risks. The risk get the reward. I got that tatted on me. No risk, no reward. Mm-hmm. Also studying the greats, man. You gotta study your history. Sometimes you gotta, I hear a lot of people like, I don't watch nobody, but I watch greats because I wanna see what they were doing to separate themselves and to keep growing, because it's hard, especially in this time. People don't be wanting to accept shit, so you gotta force them to accept it. That's why I just said, like when you said with the Beyonce situation, you gonna accept this, and we gonna go number one, and we gonna keep pushing this brand. And sometimes the risks come with a great reward. You can't be scared. I feel like as an artist, You're supposed to do that. Right. People look up to you because they can't do that in their lives. They don't have the heart. You inspire other people. So if you do the same thing, you're only going to inspire the same amount of people. I always want to grow my fan base. I always want to. And you've done it.
Mm-hmm.
You was on that big ass TV show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you came and did your own thing and your shit done grew.
Bigger.
Bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You've been a football star. You went through different levels. And it's always room for being a bigger and a better brand. And sometimes you go through heartbreaks or sometimes you go through tough times and the tough time would make you and you'll feel like, damn, what's going to happen next?
Investing. What's some of the tips? I mean, what are some of the things that, you know, you're like, man, glad I got in on that. Damn, I missed that opportunity. So what, as far as money, because like you said, you come into some money, you get money, you got money coming in and you're like, it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep.
Exactly.
You can make $10 million, but if you give $9,900,000 away, as opposed to, hey, I got $1 million and I kept $900,000. So how does Offset go about delegating where the money goes?
I invested in FaZe Clan. I got real estate. And it's this, I can't say what it is, though. I can't say it. I have a big investment that's on your phone that deal with avatars.
Mm-hmm.
And I had actually listened to my mama to this. So the dude was here in L.A. in Chinatown and he was working out of his little apartment and she brought me to his apartment. And then he needed like $245,000. And now I can show you an article where it's like up to like $700 million. But I don't never talk about it. You're the first person I ever talked to about it. It's an avatar, so it's like, but I'm not allowed to really speak on.
Well, you good. You straight then. You sure you want to make music?
Yeah, I want to make music.
Yeah, man, I mean, you good. You got
no, paper stacked up. Later, though, see, what I learned is everybody investments hit around like mid-40s.
Right.
Like, look at Nas with Ring and all that, and mm-hmm. like, even Juicy J. So I'm cool. I know I got some up the river. But as of right now, I save a lot of money, though. I got a lot of kids, bro.
Yeah, you got to save.
It's expensive.
Yeah. I got kids. I got kids, still got them. You know, had kids, I got kids. I've been there.
You already know. Yeah. I know you know. And I got two daughters, too.
Oh, you got two weddings coming.
I got two daughters. Shit. I ain't ready for them days. Or them talks. I don't even want to talk about that.
So, obviously, the avatar we can't mention about. Let me ask you this. What have you learned about the since you entered, what have you learned most about the music industry? Because I always hear it's cutthroat, they do you bad, they put you on these deals where they take it all the money, or you get it in advance and blah, blah, blah. So what have Offset learned most about the business?
Knowledge is key. And you can't blame the system because the system gonna keep going. So what you gotta do is, like I did, you gotta adjust to the system, get to learning what, ask questions. Like I'm asking questions. I don't want you to, before you give me the money, I'm gonna ask you what I gotta give you.
Yeah.
See, because at first, when I first came in the game, well, you got $2 million for me? Man, run it. Publisher, you got $5 million? Run it. Not really reading the terms, not really understanding. And then your lawyer ain't gonna tell you, your lawyer gonna tell you what you gotta do. But I feel like if you build with your lawyer, like I talk to my lawyer day to day. Well, and I'm asking questions and he know, like, I'm going to ask this question and I need you to break it down into a way that I can understand. So I understand what I'm signing up to. Cause I've been a dumb artist before, just signing shit, just getting, cause they get you with the money. You got to think, you 20 years old. These folks like, look, you got a hot song. Let me give you, $2 million. But then I'm going to own you. And then you got 5 albums. But then soon the album come out. Cause most people don't know when your album come out, you at an artist level like me, man, your first month, they done made $2-3 million.
Wow.
But it ain't your cut, it ain't your money, and it's not counting to your recoupment. But on the what they own, that done recoup the $2-3 million, and they still got you in $3 million debt. And quarterly counting it down, and they still gotta spend the money to get it. So, but at the same time, they're making an investment. So you gotta understand the business terms and understand that business, these folks need to make the money.
Right.
So that and they giving you a lot of money. But you also gotta learn, like, okay, cool. What are my deliverables for this money? What's the time limit on the deliverables? And then me, I love my label, cause I work my label. Capitol Records, I work with them. I'm gonna go to the office. I'm gonna sit down and politic. If I got a complaint, I'm not gonna try to be like an asshole about it. I'm gonna try to get a way to figure out the game. How can I politic better? How can I rub shoulders so this person can know? Cause a lot of time we blame the label, but we ain't really gave them no type of information. Right. We just turn our album in, like, make this go. And it don't work like that. It's a whole process to everything.
So did you learn, did you have to learn the hard way these lessons?
Yes, had to learn the hard way. For sure, man. Like, being trapped in deals or being signed into one deal, like, not owning. I own my rights now, but, like, not owning your rights to your music.
Right.
All that is, like, you control.
So help me out with this. Okay, there's ownership, there's masters, and there's publishing. Are those the same thing?
Wait, you said there's ownership.
I said, let me ask you a question. So is publishing and masters, is that the same thing?
No.
Or are they two different things?
That's two different things.
Okay, so you own the publishing.
I don't own my masters.
You don't?
Uh-uh. I own a percentage of my masters, but right. I don't own 100. I don't own 100%.
Are you going to try to get them?
Yeah, I'm trying to get them, but you gotta, like I just said, you gotta finish your deliverables.
Okay.
So, say for instance, you get signed. They sign you $3 million, five albums. But your album term might say you can't drop an album for 9 to 12 months. So, if we do the math,
that's some years.
That's years. 4 years, 4 or 5 years. Yeah, maybe even 6 years, because the average artist ain't just finna drop no album exactly on the 9 months. So it's still gonna be a stretch. You're creating, and then while that time, while it's going on, they still gotta spend the money into you. So it's doubling down. So it's like, most artists, you don't see no check from the label, but the one that you sign.
That's it?
That's it. Now, publishing gonna go, that's where publishing come in. They gonna go see where all your music been licensed, get all the licenses. You can recoup through streams and all that, but it be pennies to a dollar. So instead, like for me, my publishing, I have an admin deal where we are in an agreement that you will go get my stuff. I'll give you a piece of it, but I'm not gonna put it all in your hand and you can go grab everything and I get the crumbs, because then I'm gonna be left in the deal forever. So the purpose of that is to recoup and renew every time. Every two, 3 years, you're renewing without having to drop a project, because you know, with catalog, I got a long catalog with Migos and my solo stuff. It recoups, like I'm finna go re-up now.
Right.
I'm finna re-up soon after this album.
So the streaming, because I've heard some people say streaming ain't no money. Then I did talk to 21 Savage. Savage says, yeah, hey, they cut me a check every month, so there got to be some money in it. What's your take on streaming?
I get cut a check too. Streaming is not for everybody. Like, I ain't gonna lie, Savage got it. He did it right. Like, you get hot first, you get a risk. He went platinum before he was signed to anything, so he got his masters everything. But that don't be for, that's like, he like a 10%. He's like a 10%er with his situation.
Okay.
But like I'm saying, for most artists, streaming ain't nothing but like to me, I'm gonna say it's a hype thing. Cause you get sound stage money, but you might have all these billions of streams, that ain't finna register to you ain't finna be getting no check like that all the time, because that check is going to the label for signing you.
Right. So if you, let's just say.
They own the rights, they own the masters, they own the publishing. So.
Oh, so in order for you to get the billion stream for it to hit your pocket, you need to own the publisher, the catalog, and all that other stuff.
Yeah, but see, it's two things with that, see. I don't want to talk too political. All right, for instance, like, some folks that just be hard-headed, you got to get with them folks a little bit. Because they're still a machine. Like, the label is still a machine.
For sure.
I never tell nobody to be just straight independent. Even though people say it all the time, but it's like, you already got to have some money put to the side before you just say, I'm going to be an independent artist straightforward. I'd rather be with a machine, because it's a partnership and I sell music and my music.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. I don't know how many people know this, but Kobe lived with you for 6 weeks. Yeah. How old was he when he lived with you?
How old was he? He was going into his second year.
So he's about 18.
Yeah.
And you said, is it true that you signed Kobe to a recording contract?
I signed Kobe to a recording contract. So,
to do
the,
what?
The math went just like this.
Okay. Yeah, I would hear this one. Let me set up for this one.
When Will Smith made Men in Black and sold all these records,
mm-hmm.
the music business had changed where it was like, you know, it was, again, Nas, Wu-Tang, and Biggie, and sort of Mobb Deep. It was that kind of, you know, much darker sound.
Yes.
Right? Compared to what he was doing.
Right.
He was bright as bright can get.
Right. You talking about Will or
Will,
Kobe?
I'm talking about Will. I'm talking about Will right now.
Yeah, yes, okay.
So I'm like, if this guy, and he rapped over a sample and it became super pop and successful, I'm like, if we can do that, just maybe, but hold on, Shaq just did it. Shaq sold millions of records, man.
Correct.
People, like, he really did.
Yes.
It is not a fake thing.
Right.
Shaq had a successful recording music career. And I'm like, if Shaq can do it, Will Smith did it, big, Shaq just did it, this kid, Kobe, people will love this guy. I mean, he went to the prom with Brandy. There was a lot of energy around him. And he actually had a rap group. When I signed him, he was in a group. I mean, you know, Kobe, God bless. Anyway, he went solo soon.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kobe didn't start with a group. Yeah.
He was in a group, though. He was in a group, and he put in the work. He came to my house. He lived at my house for 6 weeks. I lived in New Jersey. A very dear friend of mine, Charles Oakley, used to come out to Jersey and hang out with him, worked out with him a few times. And Kobe was the, you know, we would, in the morning, get up. I got him to go to this local gym. He would shoot 1,000 shots. Then he had these tapes. It was Michael Jordan going left, Michael Jordan going right. So it was just, the tapes were split of Jordan moving left, Jordan moving right, Jordan guarding people going left, Jordan guarding people going right. And he'd watch it for hours. And then we would go to the studio and record. That was his routine every single day. I learned a lot of discipline, from a young man. I thought I was pretty disciplined and doing my thing. And then I seen another level of it with him. Very, very special talent. I could talk about him for hours because during that period of time when I got to know him, he wasn't really into having a lot of friends. A lot of people never got a chance to get deep in get a chance to get close to him because he was closed off like that. And for years, man, we would speak all the time. I mean, we became very, very close friends. So obviously it was unfortunate. I took him to Rucker Park. He played in Rucker Park, man. And he wanted to play because all these NBA guys go to Rucker Park. It's like, you know, you got to play in the Rucker.
It's like a rite of passage.
Yeah. And we go out there. And I gave him to my man. I didn't have a team. Irv Gotti grew up in my neighborhood. I let him play for Irv's Murder, Inc. team at the time. And he goes out there and all the guys are there. And he starts putting on a show, Shannon. A show. He loved it. It starts to drizzle. I'm like, we got to close this game down. I mean, I'm not letting him play, but he's not going to let the game. He's not going to want to be the one to call it. So then he starts telling the basketball team how to play on wet surfaces.
Wow.
I'm like, we're not doing any of this. Because I already know this man gets hurt.
It's on
me.
Watch.
It's on my watch. So we shut it down. But yeah, he's got 30 points in, you know, 12 minutes or some crazy number and shit like that.
So could you tell, because you said he's so disciplined, he's watching Jordan go left, watching Jordan go right. Jordan's guarding left, Jordan's guarding right. Mm-hmm. And he's back in the studio recording. Did you know then, with the level of discipline that an 18-year-old kid had, that he was going to be what he became?
Oakley told me. Charles told me immediately the similarities between him and Jordan with work ethic. He knew it immediately. He came in talking that. I didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. I'm like, whatever. He said that. But the other thing he did was he asked me, and I had this guy who worked for me at the time. He's actually now, his name is Anton Marchand. He's actually recruits for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He mm-hmm. worked for me in the music business at the time. Kobe was going to guard Allen Iverson that year, and he was very much respectful of Iverson's speed and all that. And he said, he wanted to get young guards from New York that could, you know, do their thing.
Crossover
and all that. We got them. Went to this indoor gym. He lined 10 of them up. They came in from the three-point line. He stood at the foul line. And they would come in like an assembly line, and he would guard them, try to strip them, take them to the hole, and then run back to the line before the next guy came. He ran that. He never got on offense. He ran that like an assembly line.
Wow.
He was just guarding. He was guarding guys 6 foot, fast as shit. They'd get past them, steal from them, block it, you know, rub their shit against the backboard, come back, guard the next guy. He was doing this over. I couldn't believe that he was doing this. No offense, no nothing. And it was like this level of discipline and in a tough guy. Tough, like just a strong, disciplined, tough, principle-driven man. We are one night to this bar, and back then, street guys would buy all of the Cristal.
Yeah.
Right? But let me tell you something. They're buying the Cristal because what they want is, assuming, not because they are drinking all of it, if somebody comes in and you order Cristal, you got to check in. You got to check in. So I order the Cristal. He's not even drinking. Kobe's not drinking at all back then. He was not drinking alcohol at that time. Guy says, I have to check in. This guy down at the bar, whatever. I'm like, I don't feel like doing it. He's like, man, fuck this. Just get thing. So I got the Cristal. No, I didn't get the Cristal. I didn't want to do it. I'm like, I'm not, fuck this. I'm not doing this. We go out to a diner like 2-3 in the morning. And the same guy, street guy, won't say his name, is sitting there, and Cole is making jokes about his outfit, and he's being a little loud. I'm like, yeah, you gotta
chill with that, bro.
Yeah, he's not chilling with that, bro. He's loud. The guy sends somebody over, yo, blah, 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 I want to talk to you. I go outside. I'm like, yo, the young kid, he got the gun out. He's like, yo, he got the gun out. Yo, I'm like, yo, he's a young man, da, 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 da. I'm trying to tell him. That's how nobody, he didn't even know who he was. All right. So he doesn't even know who Kobe Bryant is. I'm like, he's a young man thing. He's cool, whatever, whatever. Kobe comes outside, sees the gun. I'm like, go back in. He goes, I'm not going nowhere.
Wow.
He did this on 23rd and 9th Avenue. He did that.
So what did old boy
at
say?
18. The whole thing, it died. When he said he ain't going nowhere, I'm like, yo, he's just thing. He don't know who you are. It was already, the guy felt embarrassed. Right. It wasn't crazy. The guy felt embarrassed. He really wanted an apology for the embarrassment.
Right.
That was, because it was loud.
Right.
And I was giving him that, it's cool, man. It's fine. He didn't mean no disrespect. He doesn't even know who you are, man. Right. He's not even from here.
Right.
But when he hit the thing out, when he said, I ain't going nowhere, I'm like, dude, what kind of person is this? I'm giving you the out.
Right.
This is not your problem. I'll deal with this problem.
Right.
He don't want that. This is our problem.
Wow. Man,
I never told that story, man.
So, what, I mean, So you knowing that the kid is so disciplined, know that he's standing, as they say now, in business. What did he teach you?
You can run through walls, man. You believe it, you can do anything. There's nothing you can't do that if you believe in it. That's what he taught me. He never...
Did he speak about the basketball aspect? I understand he was there to do music, but did he talk to you about what he wanted to become in the NBA?
Oh, hell yeah, man. He had no... He manifested all of it. But he really did the work. He knew that if you did all the work, that ultimately it was going to happen. He didn't even think about it. His whole thing was that everybody who has a talent always tapped out in doing the work. I asked him one time, we were at a restaurant, and we're sitting there talking, and I always wanted to ask this question. What do you think about athletes that come from, I would ask you this, man, athletes that come from two-parent households versus athletes that come from single-parent households. So you got these guys who come from single-parent households, they're in a football field, and their anger and the shit that I'm doing this for my mother, I ain't got no father, whatever the circumstances are, they bring in all that energy on the basketball court, on the football field, and they play with that level of
rage.
Yeah. And he goes, I said, how do you feel about them versus, he goes, you know, those guys are intimidating and they play with that rage and it works until they run into the real thing. Michael Jordan, me, Magic Johnson, they run into that. And we got the same level of work ethic and rage, but we come from a solid foundation. And that solid foundation, that's the thing that those guys can't beat. He said that to me. I was like, all right.
Wow. Like, stop this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us just work our ass off.
Right.
Like, even just hearing Kat hear all the things he been through and why he didn't do this or go here and do this.
Yeah, because you and Kat had some back and forth. Y'all cool now?
No, not really. No, but it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. We don't have to be.
Right.
Because his success is his success, right, and my success is my success.
What started it?
Well, this is the thing about it. That Wanda Smith interview.
Yeah.
The part nobody talks about is, for no reason, Kat brings up me, Gerard, and Hannibal Buress. For no reason at all.
Okay.
I don't even remember what the fucking question was. He just let it like, you can't, yeah, they gonna make you a star, Lil Rel, but you ugly. Yeah. So what the fuck I got to do with this?
So you was in there with...
That's the beginning of the interview. That's what made Wanda kind of start fucking with him. Okay. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, the whole Wanda back and forth for him is the funniest shit I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
And Wanda wasn't always nice to all of us.
No.
To be quite honest
with you. Right.
So it was very interesting that all this transpired.
It was interesting.
Especially those two. It's the craziest happenstance of all time. But that's what it was. Kat, I don't know what that meant. He said, they're going to make you a star, Lil Rel, but you're ugly. He said, Lil Rel, Gerard Carmichael, Hannibal, can't walk the mall in Atlanta. I forgot the mall.
Lennox.
Lennox. And no woman would talk to them. To this day, man, I swear to God, I ain't trying to start no shit. I just don't understand. I don't think I'm the finest nigga in the world.
Right.
But a short nigga with a perm.
Man, you know he gonna see this and respond.
I don't give a fuck.
God, Lord.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if we were both two regular niggas in a mall.
Right.
And he has the perm and
right,
the mustache.
Right.
And I walk in like this with my regular shit. Who the fuck you think women gonna talk to?
I don't know, Rel. I ain't in it.
I'm just saying. So that's the only irritating thing about that for me. Like, other than that, it's like, Kat, brother, if I'm an ugly nigga, thank God, because that's why nothing happened to me. Ain't nobody approached me.
Right.
Ain't nobody asked me to do shit. I guess I'm an ugly, talented nigga.
Right.
I'm okay with it.
Man, Rel, God. Rel, why you come up here upset in the car?
I didn't do anything. You asked about it, and I'm just saying, like, and look, all comics, all of us, like, man, everybody's like, come on, man, you gonna go. But Kat did say that shit. It was just weird. I just, even when him talking about Jonathan Majors, like, who do Kat Williams think he look like? Like, you're not an attractive person. You look fucking weird.
Rayo.
He does.
How about you? Have you talked to Cat?
People dress like this nigga as Halloween. Like him, not the character.
Yeah.
They don't dress as Money Mike. They dress as Cat Williams.
When the last time you saw Cat?
That's a crazy story, right? So, it was at the Emmys a couple years ago. So, this is when we into it. Like, this is happening.
Yeah, okay, y'all.
We did the videos, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I just presented an award at the Emmys. I go backstage, right? And Chappelle don't know me and this dude beefing.
Right.
Chappelle sees me. Oh, L'Oreal. Oh, Cat Williams. Cat. You know L'Oreal, you know Cat. Now we just staring at each other.
Oh, shh.
Dave is like, what the fuck wrong with you two niggas, right? Because we ain't saying
y'all just look at each other. Ain't nobody say nothing.
And I'm balling my fist up like, you ever see the Arthur meme?
Yeah.
I'm standing there like this. We ain't saying shit to each other. And he's holding his Emmy. He has his Emmy in his hand. That was the last time I saw it. Nothing happened. He just walked away.
Y'all ain't say, hey, what's up, bro? Say,
it wasn't, nigga. I was still fuming at that time. It was like, yo, are we about to, like, what the fuck about to happen back here? Because it's
Kyle Morrell.
Yeah, I'm a Chicago nigga, too. So it's like, I mean, we about to do this.
Oh, my goodness.
We about to turn the Emmys into the Source Award.
You once said that you believe Cat was jealous of you. You still feel that way?
Nah, I was just talking shit. I don't think he's jealous of me. I do think he's jealous of Kevin Hart. And it's so weird because he don't have to be. Like, brother, you are so fucking successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're one of the most successful stand-up comedians we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have the hype machine. Honestly, he's the benefit of bootleg DVDs. You remember when I remember being in Chicago at the time. Everybody had that Cat Williams special in their house.
Right.
And because, you know, bootlegger helped comedy at that time.
Right.
Because those people go buy tickets to see you.
Right. Absolutely.
The bootleg man really was your he was your promoter.
Yes.
They watch you at the crib and you were selling all your shows. And Cat benefited from that, man.
Right.
And I think he's not even just stand-up. Man, like, anytime you see him on screen.
Oh, yeah. He just won an Emmy for Atlanta, right?
He won that shit for Atlanta. He fucking, every time you seen him on Wife and Kids, like, he was fucking great on there.
Yeah.
He was, like, you see him on, like, even the school dance movie, we know that's not a good movie.
Right.
But only thing you watch is that clip. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, let me say this. I was just, I'm talking shit. We roast each other. We comics is what it is. I don't give a fuck. Whatever you say about me after this, I don't give a fuck. Rat's ass. But at the same time, I really do wish that we could, I'm not trying to sound like some old let's get along shit, but like, god damn, it's no reason why we can't do another Harlem Nights with all this great fucking talent. Or like, not even Harlem Nights, but just a movie that features everybody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Harlem Nights were great.
Man, like Nick tried to do it with School Dance, but like, let's find something with like a really good script.
Right.
Some really dope shit and like fucking get all these powerhouses on fucking screen together. Like, I'm sick of this shit.
Right.
It doesn't make fucking sense. You know, be honest with you, it's a bunch of old beefs. So I'll say this right now. Cat, look, I'm just talking shit. I ain't mad at you. I can give a rat's ass. I respect the fuck out of you. You want the greatest to ever do it. Even if you talk shit about me after this, I don't really give a fuck. But I respect you, and I respect all y'all. So, like, I just think we all should figure out a way to, like, merge this shit up, man. Like, we all talk shit, man. But I don't think we should bring in our behind-the-scenes comedy mess.
Right.
On the floor. Just call these people.
Right.
Call Ricky and tell Ricky, hey man, Ricky, I don't like the way you was talking shit on the Friday set about how that was supposed to be your role. And just talk it out.
Right.
Call Sid and say, Sid, man, I felt like that joke, that really a joke that's not even a big fucking deal, and they both do it totally differently, and it's a joke none of you need anymore.
Right.
Let's talk this shit out. Even with Steve Harvey, talk this shit out, man. You know, Bernie, we don't have to show Bernie love by shitting on somebody else.
Oh, real.
Bernie's one of the greatest to ever fucking do it. One of the hugest influences ever in this game. He's one of the cats to me that always gonna represent a grown ass man in his fucking business.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Bernie would let this shit fly like this. Cause he wasn't that type of dude. He wasn't gonna be, you know, even when Bernie talked about, they've been playing a clip of him talking about comics stealing jokes.
Right.
But he was, that's real advice. To this day, it's the reason why I don't go up to LA a lot.
Right. We gonna steal your shit.
Nigga. And so, like, and I get it because most of the time people want to do what they think is the hot thing to do.
Right.
If you're the hot thing, guess who they gonna mimic to make it? Because everybody want to make it.
Right.
That's what they, people talk about all this other shit. I'm like, no, like, people steal styles and dialect and all types of shit. Because they like, well, this person made it. So, you know, I don't know. I love, and let me give you some props too, because, and any other comic that does this after this, we realize how mainstream you are. I don't know if you know that shit. And you've only had us on here. And so I think, you know, for the most part, you know, I told my story, hopefully inspired somebody. Yeah. That's what we should be doing.
Right.
Telling our stories and promoting each other. Not even just in stand-up, in fucking movies or TV. We have movies like The Color Purple. Dion Cole, a comic, is in Color Purple. Come on, man. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Comic View, Def Jam, is in a reimagined movie in Color Purple?
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And so we have all these things happening. We got the Ava DuVernays and the movies like Origin and fucking American Fiction. Man, I love everybody. Now I don't know, like, cornball shit. Shannon, I love this shit. You know, once again, your show has kicked off. Outside that interview, so many conversations happening. And, you know, one of the things that people don't realize, once again, I was telling you earlier that everybody's journey is different.
Correct.
You know, I did hear Kat say, like, you know, he was talking about Kevin Hart, like, well, Kevin Hart, how many people, you know, come to LA with a movie and a sitcom and this and that? Well, unfortunately, I was watching it. I'm like, dang, Kat never, he don't know about the festival circuit. He don't know. Jesus Christ. You know how Kevin gets deals like that? You go to the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, which is one of the biggest comedy festivals in the world. You know what happens at the Montreal Comedy Festival? You go up on stage, have a great 5 to 10 minutes, and the next day, you're meeting with studio execs that are actually there. They were giving people deals at these festivals. That festival helped change my life.
They still do that?
Still do it. Still, it's still the biggest. Like, a lot of us go now and get awards from it now. I got an award as a breakout comedy star a couple years ago. And I remember my speech, I teared up giving my speech. You know why? Because I sat in the back of that room 10 years ago as a new face comic. It was like, one day I'm going to be up there to get an award. And I got my award and I literally, it was packed in there. And I told the comics, I had a little speech in there. I said, let me forget the speech. I sat in that last seat back there. That last seat back there and watched the award show and spoke that up, that I was going to be up there getting this one day. You know, I'll say this once again, you don't know everybody's journey like that.
Right.
You don't. And I think people got to be okay with not understanding different parts of the game. Like, brother, the festival, a lot of people got, it was a time, the early 2000s, man, they was giving out deals at the HBO Aspen Festival and the Just for Laughs Festival. They was giving cash like $500,000 and having like just money. I think Kat might have been one of the people that got one of those deals at one point. Whatever opportunities you get, that's on you what you do with it.
Right.
You can't judge nobody else how they took the ball and ran with it.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why I had to say that. Kat gave me some advice to this day that I've kept with me, which is very interesting. It was weird when he gave it to me. We was at the Improv. He still do Monday nights at the Improv. And I got off stage, had a great set. And Kat sent one of his homies to, like, yo, Kat want to, you know, say what's up to you. And I go say what's up to him. And he didn't really say hi or nothing. He just gave me this advice. That's all it was. I was like, oh, man, what's up, man? I'm a big fan, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like, don't let these niggas burn you out. I was like, what? Don't let these niggas burn you out.
What did he mean by that?
I don't know. But I took that advice, and it shows up in certain times, right? I think it shows up when my team wants me to do way more stuff and I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or somebody's pushing me too much. And I'm like, no, I don't want to be burnt out. I gotta have it together. I think, like, You know, I look at somebody like...
Well, you have to learn to say no.
You got to... Not even just no.
Or not right now.
You got to learn to pace yourself. It doesn't have to... You know, that strike the iron wise hot thing, I think is... Could be a little scary at times because that means you're just going to do whatever. But, like, if you take yourself and just pace yourself... Because I look at somebody... Bernie Mac's a great example who we saw really... Bernie was working all the time.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes, he, you know, I think he might have a little fatigued because he'll come to L.A. He didn't live in L.A.
Right.
So Bernie would come here and film and then literally go back to Chicago, which is crazy. Right. You'll film here all week and then you fly back to Chicago just to be at your house. Like, that's a lot. And so I just wanted to make sure Kat said that. But then Chris Rock kind of said the same thing when we talked before. And I've heard it from a bunch of veteran comics about pacing yourself. And not burning yourself out.
But as a young comic coming up in the game, there's a fine line between getting out and doing enough sets so people see you, so you get that big break, mm-hmm. and not like Kat said, not burning yourself out. So where is that line?
Well, in the beginning, it doesn't feel like a burnout because you grind. You just need the stage. You just wait.
Correct.
You get the stage and the stage time, man. That's what you would do. You know what I'm saying? Like. You know, like, for instance, I told you about D-Ray had the Sunday spot.
Right.
When I first started, once again, that was the hottest club in Chicago. And I wanted to go up every week. And so he's like, yo, you want some stage time? You got to help seat. So I helped seat the people every Sunday. Both shows, I was seating people. And I'm going to be catching a lot of shit from comedians. Like, damn, how you going to do that? That's not degrading. That's not da da da. I'm like, nah, because I get a chance to go up on the hottest stage every single week in front of the biggest crowd every single week.
Right.
So I don't care how embarrassing it looks. Matter of fact, it gives me a cheat code. I know everybody that's in here. I know what this audience is going to be. I know what their energy is. I seated everybody in here. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, I cared about the stage time earlier. It's just getting those reps up. And that was so important. But then it's like learning all different aspects of the game, which is why, like, you know, I think it's very important. I have to say this. It's like, everybody's journey is different. Nobody has the same journey, right? And which is why I don't like telling nobody else's story. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Everybody's journey is different, which is why I think it's so beautiful about this time now in black comedy. You know, people don't realize that comedy is still kind of a newer entertainment than almost like hip hop is. And so we just really seeing our consistent millionaires of black comedians.
Mm-hmm.
This is new. Like, the deals that Kevin is getting, the stuff that Kat has done, the stuff that Sid has done, the stuff Ricky's done with the radio. This is consistently still almost first generation of all this type of success.
Right.
And it's a bunch of people at the same time. And so, like, you know, I'm excited about, like, we just have all these different things happening. We have fucking hit radio hosts. We have cats who've been on several sitcoms. We have cats who still touring arenas everywhere and selling out. We had this cat who's like, you know, you look at Kevin is selling underwear now. He got everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, comics are selling shoes. Mike Epps is buying his neighborhood.
Right.
You know, Michael Blackson's going back to, like, it's so much happening. It's like, yo, like, I hope sometimes that people could take time. I know it's competitive what we do, but take time to be like, yo, we doing this shit. You know, we have a Jamie Foxx who won an Oscar.
Yeah.
A black stand-up comic. And we think about mostly everybody came from Def Jam and Comic View.
True.
You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, our people made us stars, and now everybody's crossed over.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's crazy. I'm not who I'm who I am because of them.
I ask people, especially comedians, to come in here and give me their Mount Rushmore.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And they name seven people. You do understand that Mount Rushmore has four heads.
Yeah, but it's just... Okay, go ahead.
And a lot of times what I've been getting is that current comedian says, I can't name somebody from my generation because I'm with them.
With them, right.
Right. So if I said, okay, give me your give me Godfrey's four best comedians.
It's usually your four best or should be the people that you watch the most. Like you watch video on them the most. And I got Pryor, Carlin, Red Fox, and Paul Mooney. Right. I watch them all the time. And Paul Mooney, oh my God. I think Paul Mooney doesn't get the respect that he deserves, you know, because he wrote for Richard Pryor. He wrote for Living Color.
Right.
Homie the Clown. That was Paul Mooney. He wrote for even the Chappelle Show.
Wow.
I love Paul Mooney. I watch a lot of Paul Mooney.
Okay.
And I wish Paul Mooney were alive to come on this show. He'd be like, Shannon, this is a very good show. Very. You're brilliant. But niggas don't like you. Niggas. Shannon Sharp, you a big motherfucker, and you will kick a nigga's ass.
You didn't put Pryor up there.
I did.
You put Pryor. Murphy, that's who you left.
No, Murphy, see, I think Eddie Murphy, oh, of course, he's a hero of mine. One of the greatest comedic actors. Nobody's fucked with Eddie Murphy on the comedy and movies.
Right.
And you can match any, but there's a lot of funny people, but Eddie Murphy is the best. I don't think I've seen Eddie Murphy enough as far as specials and stuff.
Okay.
But Eddie is up there. Well, you said top four. That's bullshit. It should be top five. Eddie, look, put up Eddie.
Mount Rushmore. Who are your four heads you going to put on
Mount Rushmore? Those are presidents that should have no business up there.
Well, we got comedians up there. We're going to put the comedians up there.
All right. I just gave you Red Fox. Red Fox ain't bad. Yeah. Thank you very much. Right. I really like your show. It's very good. I watch it all the time. How you doing, sir? Yeah. Anyway, this is Red Fox, and I'm very happy to be on Club Shay Shay. A lot of niggas got a podcast.
You like George Carlin. What is it about
Carlin? His wordplay. It's his intelligence and how he puts words together. And listen, everybody has a taste. And Carlin was never lazy with a joke. He always, because he grew up. His parents were advertising people. His mom and dad were good with words. And he was always, it's his joke writing. It's just the wordplay. He loved using different words. And so I was like, that's made me focus on words because comedy is an art form of words, syntax. It's about how you say it. I see some jokes and like, even for myself, I'm hard on myself. If I see a joke and it's too lazy, I go, it could be better than that.
Right.
And I watch Carl and I go, damn, even if the joke wasn't that funny to you, but the work he put in it, you go, God damn, that was brilliant. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's his wordplay and the things that he says about society. Calling out white supremacy. A white guy saying it to white people is very important.
Yes.
An Irish guy from Harlem. It's important that this white guy is saying, you know, y'all ain't shit. You feel me?
Have you ever heard a joke?
Yeah.
And you're like, I could have done that joke better.
Yes. And then there's some jokes where I go, damn, he got that. That's the best. Or she got that. That was the best take I've seen. I've seen some where I could, damn, I could have done that better. Damn, I wish I had that joke. Right. That was perfect. Yeah, of course. A lot of many times you do.
So can you do Chappelle?
Yeah. See, I'm going to tell you something, man. This is great.
This is great. I love being on Club Shay Shay, bitch. Man, I love it.
He's like, and Chappelle I've known since 97. And Chappelle is one of the greatest, but everybody does a Chappelle. So you have to sort of talk like this.
Right.
And now his voice is a little, you know, I'm not transphobic. I'm not. I have friends. I have a lot of trans friends. And you remember when he got, I guess they blocked his show in Minnesota.
Right.
And at a theater, they were like, the trans community came.
Yeah.
They blocked his show. And then he went to another theater about 20 minutes later and sold that out.
Right.
He's like, I'm trans. I feel I'm trans because I transferred from one theater to another.
And that was a great transaction, bitch.
When I hear people talk about him.
Yes.
It's like, there's like, he was a prodigy. He started at a very, very young
14.
Age. Like, but a lot of comedians don't start until they're in their later 20s, mid 20s.
Yeah, I started after college, 22.
So here's a guy that's 14, and they're saying he's going to these clubs where adults perform.
Yeah.
And so you knew him. Did you know he was going to become this?
No, I didn't. I heard about him. Well, actually, when I first got to New York City, one of my first shows was with him on the show. It was with him on the show. And he was, I heard his name, Dave Chappelle, because he had done Star Search.
Yes.
Young, and even Ed McMahon said, that guy's going to be a star. Right. Watch. And
people don't remember Star Search.
And Ed McMahon, before American Idol, it was Star Search. Four stars.
Yep.
Sinbad came from there. Martin Lawrence, a lot of people that are stars came from there. And I heard about him. Then I ended up on a show with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had to go after him. He murdered. I had to go after him. But I heard about him and I knew, okay, this guy is something to watch because everybody, Chappelle. Mm-hmm. And I guess a guy, I want to give credit to Tony Woods, he took Chappelle under his wing in DC. Tony Woods, who's another underrated comedian who's fantastic. So Chappelle, I knew Chappelle was going to be, I didn't know how big until that Chappelle show. I didn't know he was going to be like,
right.
Woo. I mean, he's massive.
You know? I mean, cause you see him in, Nutty Professor. He's Reggie.
Killed that.
And
shit.
Then you see him in Blue Street.
Yeah.
And you like, man, dude is.
He's amazing. And his comedy, he's an amazing comedian because I think he loves comedy more than anything.
I believe so.
Because he puts the time in. He puts the hours in.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you this. I think you had a guest on here that I disagreed with.
Okay.
No, and this is no, I would love to start beef because I want this to go to 60 million. I want to call somebody out. I just want to fucking start some shit, but I won't do that. You know what I'm saying? Damn. But when Country Wayne was on here, first of all, I don't know Country Wayne at all,
right.
But I watched his video. I give him his credit for him making all that money. I was listening to him like, oh, what? How did you do this?
Right.
You know, I love his hustle. Smart dude. I mean, he making millions off of this shit. Right. I wish I could. But he said one statement that I disagreed with, Country. I disagreed with you.
What was the statement?
I think he said, and if I'm wrong, you correct me.
Okay.
Said something about, if anybody's in a comedy club still, that means you're not doing anything. Something like that. Mm-hmm. To that, I don't know if he was answering Faison.
Right.
I think it was him and Faison going at it.
Okay.
Because Faison's my dude.
Right.
Faison.
Everybody be going at Faison.
I love Faison goes at everybody else. He's funny. Faison's a funny son of a bitch. But he's saying if you're still in the comedy clubs, you're not a real comedian. I think he said that. Am I wrong?
Something to that effect.
And I go.
But I think he was talking about him. Because,
okay,
like,
please. Cause I was like, you are wrong.
Right.
About that shit.
Right.
I'm in the comedy clubs. DL's in the comedy clubs are still being built. They're not fading away.
Right.
If you do theaters, that's like a blessing.
Right.
But theaters are multi-purpose rooms.
Right.
Comedy clubs usually are just for comedy. Comedians of all statures.
Right.
Do comedy clubs. There's the rare moments you have that, you know, Chappelle still comes to comedy clubs and works on his shit.
Right.
Seinfeld, who's a billionaire, still comes to the comedy club.
But I think what he was, what Wayne was,
I'm just saying, I might be misinterpreting.
No, I think what he was saying is that's his only choice is to do those. The people that you mentioned can do arenas. They can do theaters.
Yeah.
He's saying that he probably, the only thing he can do.
Okay.
Is,
I'm like, shit. So what does that make me? Because it's not easy. First of all, it's not easy to fill a comedy club. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a 300-seater, 400-seater, it's not easy.
Right.
Like, there's people who have been fortunate, especially with the algorithm. You get the algorithm, you got 8 million followers. Yeah, just numerically, you're going to fill the shit up.
Right.
But are you going to put the work in? Are you going to have the performance that keeps up with to match it? Which comedy, I'm going to tell you this, and even Kat said it, you can't cheat comedy, man. I'm telling you. When I first got to New York, you know how many shows I was doing per week? 40 shows a week.
40?
You heard what I said. 40, dog. Give me some cognac.
Shit. Hello.
Let me get that cognac. Come on, man. Get that cognac. Shit.
Hold on, God.
Get that shit. Hell yeah.
There's only seven. Godfrey, there's get only that. 7 days.
Yeah.
Mm. So you you doing?
Isn't that how y'all? Yeah.
How are you doing 40 shows in a week?
Let me show you. So when I got to New York City, I remember it was a Tracy Morgan and some other cats, and they were like, "Yo," I said, "Hey," because in Chicago we would do. You give them out 6 or 7 shows a week.
Yeah. What a day.
And I got to New York. I did a show I was in Harlem. I did one show. They was like, "Yo, we about to go." I said, "Where y'all going now?" "Yo, there's shows in Brooklyn. Are you coming? You got more shows?" Hell yeah. Boom. I hit about 5 stages that same night. And I said, "This is how y'all do it?" It's like, "Hell yeah, we do multiple." The average comedian in New York, and I don't know if this is perfect math, does about between 4 to 7 shows a night, stage time. We got a lot of stages. We got a lot. Shout out to the Comedy Cellar. That's my spot, Comedy Cellar in New York City. But I was doing 5 shows a night. Wow. About 5 shows a night on the weekdays. Then on the weekends, I do 8 or 9. 8 or 9 shows. Yeah, it would be me, Patrice O'Neal, Bill Burr, you know, Keith Robinson. It was all of us. Wanda Sykes Hall. I knew Wanda Sykes Hall.
That's my girl.
Yeah, Wanda's the best. But that's how you did it. You just ran all over the city, and there was sometimes there'd be a club down the block. So you can go on stage there. You go over there, hit that. Yeah, so I would start at about 7 a.m. at 7 p.m. and then end at around 3 a.m. So I was doing comedy, and this is consistent. This is no breaks. This is consistent shit. Comedy takes that much work. It's really a sport. It's a sport. You got to go out there, and you got to put the reps in, period. You can't cheat it. I don't give a fuck who you are. You can't cheat it.
Is that how you get good at the craft?
You goddamn right. And then you know what's funny? Is when you're on stage, they see the difference. They see the difference. They see the wordplay. They see the transition. You get those nuances as you stay on stage a lot. You have to.
Right.
I don't know. Somebody told me, it was a younger comic, said, "No, one day they're going to be able to skip steps in comedy." I said, just because you get on a TV show faster than a veteran don't mean you're good at it. Because I'm not trying to be an asshole, but a lot of these companies are skipping a lot of comedians that are ready. There's a lot of, because people ask me, "Where are you getting your next Netflix budget?" I said, they don't really approach me. They don't really approach a lot, not just me, but they don't approach a lot of us. They've been given specials to people that don't even have an hour. You can tell somebody ain't ready by the way they edit it. You go, "Oh, that motherfucker started bombing at 15 minutes. That motherfucker started bombing at 20. They're not, because comedy takes, yeah, you have to be ready. You have to put your time in. And the people that are ready are like, "Hey, I'm ready for a special." They're not, that's why a lot of people are putting their shit up on YouTube.
YouTube.
Example, Ali Sadiq. If you ain't watched Domino Effect, you're out of your damn mind. Domino Effect 1, 2, and 3. He just put 3. It's all on YouTube.
Right.
It's all on YouTube. This guy has been ignored. He had a chance to, he's been ignored, but he's putting it, you're counting on yourself. You got Andrew Schultz. There's Shane Gillis. There's a whole bunch of guys putting shit up on YouTube. That's what I'm going to have to do. Oh, and by the way, Shannon, I'm starting a GoFundMe. Yeah, that's right. I'm starting to GoFundMe to raise money to do my own special. Yes.
Man,
I'm
not going to bullsh.
What?
You bull jiving.
Why am I bull jiving? I'm not bull jiving. I'm raising money. Listen, GoFundMe. Go to GoFundMe Godfrey Special. I'm raising money. For real. I'm taking donations. No different than a church and a preacher. I'm taking donations. Because Jesus wants it. But yeah, I'm raising my own money. I've been offered some money. Because listen, to do a special, it's budgets. You can go from 100,000 to 200,000. It depends.
Right.
Netflix pays for all that.
Right.
Oh, Amazon pays for all that. But if they're not coming to me and coming to some of the other people, I gotta raise money on my own.
Yes.
And then it'll be mine and I can own it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't know. But so that's what's going on. There's a lot of comedians, men and women, that are being ignored. You got great comedians like Yamanika Sanders. You got Marina Franklin. You got a lot of great people. My man Dante Nero. You got Ruben Paul. You got a lot of great comedians. Tony Rock. You got a lot of great comedians that are really putting in the work and are ready to do 1, 2, 3. Let's go. Listen. They're giving specials to the same people every time. I see the same people, which some of them do deserve it. I go, yeah, I get why. But man, there's a lot of people just waiting on their first one. And then they're giving it to people who have been doing comedy 2 years. So bullshit. It's bullshit.
How has social media helped or hurt comedy?
Listen. I think it's 50-50. It hurt comedy as far as... I believe there's a lot of bums in comedy. A lot of mediocre bums in comedy because of social media. Because they're seeing, I had a friend call me the other day. I haven't seen him since college. He was like more of a business guy, corporate. And when I started-
You had the same number since college?
No, not called me, sorry. Facebook me,
okay.
That shit.
Okay.
Right? No, he actually called me because I had given him my number a few years ago. Then he goes, yo, I need to call you. I need to talk to you. I was like, talking to me about what, and I know what he does. He's a corporate guy. So when I was doing my comedy, being broke and shit, he goes, how's that little comedy thing you're doing?
Oh, little.
Yes.
Little.
They would say that. How's that little comedy thing? Mm-hmm. I say, man, I'm just doing it, man. Come to a show. They would never come.
Right.
Boom. Those are the kind of guys that go see the more famous guys.
Yes.
But won't come to your shit.
Yeah.
I said, cool. So now, years later, he goes, yo, I've been writing like comedy, this, dot, 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 dot. I was thinking about, and I said, why? For what? Why
are you corporate guy? I mean, ain't you at J.P. Morgan?
Word.
Ain't you at...
Word.
Yeah.
We're older now. Why are you thinking about comedy? I said in my head, he's been watching social media. He goes, well, I've been watching a lot of video. So now you think it's easy.
Ah.
That's the only thing I think social media has done is they make it look like it's fucking easy.
The YouTube tutorials.
That's like this. Hi, welcome. How to be a tight end. It's so easy. How to be the tight end. Real easy. It's the same. You can know. You got to show up to practice and you got to put the fucking reps in. I'm promising you, because when I first started doing comedy, I was funny. It was me. It was Corey Holcomb, who's another funny, crazy bastard. Corey Holcomb. Yeah. Corey Holcomb, who I brought into the game, by the way. You guys can thank me for Corey Holcomb because I brought him to amateur night. I brought him to amateur night, made him do comedy because I've known him since I was a teenager, and he's always been a very, very, very funny man. You got to put in the reps. And we were all funny at the beginning.
Right.
D-Ray Davis was all funny. We didn't have the jokes yet. We didn't have nothing to say, right. But we had funny quips here and there.
Right.
It takes years to get your voice in comedy. It's 10 years. 10 years. I don't give a fuck. Here's an example. I was sitting with Seinfeld. Yes, I said it. I was sitting with Seinfeld. He was doing a documentary called Comedian. I'm in that documentary. This is when he was making his comeback after Seinfeld. He was coming back to comedy. Mm-hmm. So he would come to the Comedy Cellar and hang out with me and hang out with all of us. And one day he asked me, how long you been doing comedy? I said, and I stuck my chest. I said, nah, about 9 years now, going on 10. He's like, okay, you're a 9-year-old in comedy then. That's your comedy age. Always remember that. That's your age in comedy. I never forgot that.
Wow.
My age in comedy is about 27 years now. Yeah, I've been doing it almost 30 years. You know what I mean? And then, I see why it takes so long, because it's effortless for me now. But I still see the difficulty in it, because I can do 1 hour. Now I got to do a whole different hour. When you see Chris Rock is a technician. He'll go in, come in the comedy club, work on his shit. Seinfeld does the same shit. Ray Romano still comes in. These guys are multimillionaires, but because it's a craft, because the comedy is always better than you. Comedy is always better than you, because you always got to redo something. You always got a story to tell. You never, if you get too conceited in a lot, and that's another thing about social media, it's making these motherfuckers cocky. They come around thinking, because, hey, man, I got 10 million followers. I go, well, you got to follow me tonight.
Wow.
Shit. We'll see what that shit does to you. Okay, buddy? I'm glad that you have 10 million. I'm glad you got your little sock puppet thing. Good for you. Right. But we're about to do the real shit. And good luck following me. But, it takes, and listen, these younger cats that come in, they can't help when they were born. They were born in the social media phase. But I try to tell them, dog, doing a sketch is different than stand-up. Please, Lord, I'm telling you, be careful, because you're in a time continuum. When you're on stage and people done paid their money, they done sent their kids a babysitter, and motherfuckers are sitting there like this. All right, motherfucker, shit. $100 the goddamn ticket, man. I'll be some ha-has in this motherfucker. Real shit. And so you got an hour. And what if the dude before you just did a hot 30 in front of you, that the feature just smoked it? Now you got to do your shit. I'm like, it's the hardest form of entertainment, comedy, which gets no respect, barely wins awards. Comedy is the hardest. You know why? You know why people heckle? You know why people heckle, Shannon?
What?
Because everybody has a sense of humor. You make somebody laugh. People over here make somebody laugh. You was funny at the barbecue. You was funny at the water cooler, right? Everybody's funny.
Right.
You were even funny on the field. You used to talk shit on the field.
I did.
You did a commercial. I remember the commercial that you did. You'd be like, yo, what you gonna do, man? It was a commercial. Yeah. So that's funny. But people go, okay, well, I make people laugh. There's a man or a woman on stage making people laugh, but I'm funny too, so I'm not even gonna show you respect. You go to the opera, ain't nobody talking, are they? You go to the opera, I go to the opera. I'm cultured. You go to the opera, Figaro, Figaro. And someone's like, man, sing that shit. And he'd be like, Nigaro, Nigaro. Yo, no, you're not going to say that because you don't have a sense of opera.
Right.
You go to the ballet, I've been to the ballet. Shit, I go to that shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and nobody says, man, that girl flexible than a motherfucker. Right? Yo, why that dude balls out? Yo! You know what I'm saying? Because you have a respect, because it's something you can't do. But for some reason, comedy is that one art form where everybody feels they're your equal.
Yeah.
Even the comedians have been doing it 2 years, think they're your equal. And I don't like it. I think comedy should be like the army. That's what I love about the armed forces. I'm a general. You're a fucking cadet. You stand at attention when I walk in. When I see George Wallace, I just did a show with Arsenio Hall. By the way, one of the nicest men I've ever met. I've never met Arsenio. Arsenio's a fucking legend, but people don't understand.
Yeah.
Arsenio, he goes, Godfrey, man, good seeing you, brother. I've been watching you. You know how his finger? Yeah. I said, Godfrey, I've been watching you.
Yeah, he was way back there when he pointed that finger.
Yeah, he's like, Godfrey.
Yeah.
He goes, I've been watching you since the pandemic. And I said, I got to salute you. You're a general, man.
Right.
You're a 5-star.
Right.
We got to, I like rank and file has to happen. It's like in the rookie. You know, I walked on the team at Illinois.
Oh, did you?
I did. On a dare. I did it because I was trying to do track and field and I wasn't really sure. And then this dude named Marlon Primus, I'm saying his name. Marlon Primus, he came up with Henry Jones.
Yeah.
So this dude was so talented. He played our free safety.
Okay.
6'4", could throw the ball a mile. Because sometimes we'd be on the field just fucking around practicing and stuff. And he could throw the, I said, my God, man, you can throw. He could punt. I go, how come you're not a quarterback? He goes, because in Illinois, they didn't want any black quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They kept all the white. They converted all the black dudes mm-hmm. into defensive guys.
Right.
And he said, and he was from L.A., so he'd be like, yo, cuz. He's like, you should try out, cuz. I dare you. Try out. And so I tried out, and I made the team. Didn't start. I was the meat squad, right. But hell, I was amongst.
You made it.
I made it. I made the team. I made the squad. I was on there for like 3 years.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering 2 shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.